Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Sunbury Press Book Show on the BookSpeak Network. Sponsored by Sunbury Press, a publisher of paperback, ebooks, and hardcovers in a variety of categories, distributed worldwide, and are available wherever books are sold. I'm your host, Lawrence Knorr, and tonight we're going to be talking to author Ronald Mayer about his book, The 1932 Yankees, the story of a legendary team, a remarkable season, and a wild World Series. At the outset of the Great Depression, as FDR campaigned to replace Herbert Hoover, a baseball season was played across America. In the National League, the Chicago Cubs narrowly won the pennant thanks to the likes of Gabby Hartnett, Charlie Grimm, Billy Herman, Riggs Stevenson, Kai Kai Kyler, Johnny Moore, Lon Warnke, and Guy Bush. In the American League, leaving Connie Mack's Philadelphia Athletics in the dust. Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Bill Dickey, Earl Combs, Tony Lazzari, Ben Chapman, Frankie Crosetti, Joe Sewell, Lefty Gomez, Red Ruffing, George Pipgrass, and Johnny Allen led the way to one of the winningest teams in the early American League, overshadowed only by the 1927 Yankees. Chicago and New York then clashed in one of the most lopsided and talked about World Series in baseball history. So we have Ronald Mayer. He's also the author of a number of baseball books besides the 32 Yankees. He's written about the 1937 Newark Bears, also a book called Perfect, about 14 pitchers of perfect games, a book about Christy Mathewson, and a book about the 1923 Yankees, and last but not least, the New Jersey Book of Lists. A very busy guy from New Jersey. Welcome, Ronald Mayer.
Glad to have you tonight, Ron. Yeah, glad to be here.
Great time of year to be talking baseball. I know spring training has started. You must be excited about the upcoming season. How do your Yankees look?
Yeah. Well, you know, if you read what the press says, I mean, everything is rosy, but I guess I'm a hard-nosed guy, and I'd like to see the Yankees get a little bit more pitching. That's always the problem. I mean, they got two guys there that are iffy, you know, Tanaka and Cece. I mean, they go down, you got problems. So they could use pitching, no question.
I'm assuming you're a Yankees fan since you've written a bit about the Yankees.
Yeah, my father used to talk to me about Bill Dickey and Earl Combs and a bunch of those guys when I was growing up. Yep.
Yeah, I'm a big Phillies fan, but I also watched the Yankees on Channel 11 as a kid because I had as a paper boy, I spent a few bucks and got a black and white TV that had some rabbit ears on it, and I could get UHF and get those Yankee games. Used to love that. The book we're talking about, the guys we're talking about, I mean, as I rattle off the names, it basically sounds like a wing of the Hall of Fame. There's some great guys that played on that 32 team.
Yeah, well, what prompted me to write this book was I read somewhere, I don't recall now, that the 1932 Yankees had 10 future Hall of Famers. I said, oh, wait a minute now, 10 on one team? Can you imagine, Lawrence, now, today? You're lucky you get one or two.
Well over the luxury tax.
So I looked into it, and sure enough, there were 10 of them, including the manager. They had Ruth, Gehrig, Dickey, Lazzari, Sewell, Combs, Pennock, Gomez, Ruffing, and McCarthy. It's, you know, unbelievable. I said, well, gee, let me check into this and see what it looks like. And the more I looked into it, the more it developed into a fantastic season, a fantastic World Series. I mean, it was more than, you know, just the 10 ball Hall of Famers. I mean, they won the pennant by 13 games, as you, said in the beginning. And the A's had, Philadelphia A's had a wonderful team. I mean, you know, they had Jimmy Fox. I think he hit, I don't know, like 58 home runs that year.
Wow.
They had, Mickey Cochran, Al Simmons. They had Lefty Grove in pitching. Rube Walber. George Earnshaw. And so they had a good club. You know, it wasn't that they were in a weak league. And
yeah,
they did very well, and during the season, I mean, it was interesting. During the season, it was, I think, around June 3rd to be exact. Gehrig hit 4 home runs in one game,
wow.
And. You could have had the 5th game if it wasn't. I don't recall the left fielder, but he made a sensational catch, or else it would have been 5 in that game. And the same game, this is incredible. The same game, Tony Lazzeri hit for the cycle, the regular cycle of whatever you want to call it. He had a single, a double, a triple, and a home run in that order. And the home run, would you believe it, was a grand slam. I mean,
wow.
You can't make this stuff up.
So he did the cycle in order?
In order.
That's
yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, the other thing that was going on, you know, it was the back in the backdrop was the Great Depression was just underway. And I wonder if maybe that has something to do with why this team was somewhat forgotten, because we talk so much about the 27 Yankees. Then you talk about, you know, DiMaggio's teams and the teams of the 50s as well, the Yogi's teams and Casey Stengel and all that. But we kind of forget a little bit about Joe McCarthy in the 1930s.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, like I said, I think in the beginning of the book, the 23 club was got a lot of publicity, as you said. 27, of course, 39 and 61 when the M&M boys, Mantle and Maris, they got a lot of press. And then the latest was the 1998 Yankees. That was a team that won 114 games, which included playoffs and World Series. You know, with Jeter and Martinez and Posada, and Williams and those, that whole group.
I wonder if that team has 10 Hall of Famers before it's all said and done. Maybe 4 or 5.
Yeah, 10 is going to be tough to beat or to tie. But they might have. Well, they got one in there already, the Rivera.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So back in 32, when I opened talking about this. Former Cub manager Joe McCarthy. So was he? What was the deal with the Yankees management? It wasn't Miller Huggins. Something happened with Miller Huggins,
McCarthy Miller Huggins over. Passed. He passed away suddenly, and McCarthy had been fired by the Cubs. And the previous year he had won the pennant in for them, but he lost the World Series. But he was fired, so he was available. And the Yankees picked him up right away, McCarthy. And his first year, he didn't win anything, but his second year, 32, he brought them home with the pennant and the World Series. Yeah. And he was
now, I know we've already...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, we've already kind of spoiled the book a little bit with saying how they won the pennant. So it's like, games, so no surprises in the book there. Now, you're going to say something else about McCarthy?
Well, he was a lot different than Miller Huggins. Miller Huggins was kind of loose. He let the players do pretty much what they wanted to do, within reason. Of course, Ruth, nobody could control Ruth anyway. But when McCarthy came in, he had strict rules, you had to be at breakfast at a certain time. We had drills all the time. You had a dress, you know, look presentable. And so it kind of cracked the whip a little bit, at least compared to what Miller Huggins, you know, was. But and he got the results, no question.
Was this one of Root's last years with the Yanks?
It was next to last year. I think his last year was 34, maybe, or that, or 34. He went to the Braves. I'm not sure. Yeah, I think 34. He went to the Braves, but don't quote me.
no, I think you're right. So 33 would have been probably his last year with the Yanks. So this 32 his last pennant with the Yanks.
Yeah, that was definitely his last pennant. Yeah. And World Series. Yeah. And he went out in a blaze of glory there. I mean, he was always looking to be the manager. There was no question. And Rupert wasn't going to make him manager under any circumstances. Was he going
Yeah, during the season, they have a pennant race pretty much with the A's, I guess, as their main competition. But
yeah,
from what
Washington
you recall,
was
it ever in doubt? Was there ever really any competition that summer?
Maybe early on. And then at one point, I forget the exact date, but then it was pretty much over. From that point on, the Yankees never lost first place. They were, shoo-in. And even the Chicago story is an interesting one, too, because the Cubs were 5 games out of the race when Charlie Grimm took over. They fired Rogers Hornsby and Charlie Grimm took over, and he brought them a pennant, and that was a big somewhat of a shocker. It was around August sometime, early August, and they were two entirely different personalities. Rogers Hornsby was not very well liked, from what I read. The ball players. He was just he was tough. He demanded a lot from every ball player. I mean, you know, there's one thing to demand stuff, but as one of the ball players said that, Rogers Horns was probably one of the, if not the best right-handed hitter in baseball. He expects everybody to hit like he does. Well, that's not going to happen. And, you know, he was too demanding. And now you get Charlie Grimm, whose nickname was Jolly Charlie. And he's an entirely different personality. The players took to him, and he brought home a pennant.
It looks like the Cubs were going through the managers if they went from McCarthy to Hornsby, and then Grimm in what, 3 or 4 seasons. That's pretty. That's a lot of turnover.
Exactly.
A lot of turnover.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and he had Go ahead.
I was going to say, let's get back to the Yankees. We're talking about 10 Hall of Famers on the same team. That's a lot of egos. And you got Ruth and Gehrig. Now, I know those two were polar opposites. You know, Ruth, the flamboyant playboy, and Gehrig, the quiet family man. But tell us a little bit about some of the other personalities that you recall. Who were some other characters on the team?
Yeah, well, I think there were two real characters, and they were totally opposite guys. Lefty Gomez, I mean, he's just, beside being a Hall of Famer and a great left-handed pitcher, was generally a nice guy and on and off the field. And, had a great sense of humor, a great wit. I devote almost 2 pages to his, best quips that he had, really, funny stuff, one-liners, very bright guy. And then his polar opposite was Johnny Allen. Johnny Allen was a rookie in 32. In fact, the previous year he was playing in Newark here in New Jersey. and he wound up having a 17-4 record with the Yankees, and he really was a huge, huge help. But he was just uncontrollable. I mean, he did some crazy things. I'm trying to recall some of them, but he just was out of control, and Yankees eventually had to get rid of him. And I think they traded him off. I think it was Cleveland he went to, but I'm not sure. But other than that, too, that was pretty much harmony on that club. You didn't
not like Gilly Martin's teams, huh?
Oh my goodness! No, not like Billy Martin. There was only one Billy Martin, and you match him up with Steinbrenner, and you've got some.
And Reggie.
You got,
yeah.
And Reggie, oh yeah, the straw that stirred the drink, huh? Yeah. Yeah, they were fun days, though. I mean, if you were a fan, they were fun days, the Yankees.
Those are the days I was watching the Yankees with Catfish Hunter. I remember Catfish and Thurman Munson, I think.
Yeah, they.
It was right before he passed away, before the plane. I guess he was in a plane crash. And I remember
right,
when that happened.
Yeah.
And yeah, so a little bit of time there that I was following the Yankees before I really was all in with the Phillies. Most of my life.
You're still a Philly fan?
Oh, yeah, and real happy about Harper, although I hope he lives up to the catch.
Yeah.
we'll see.
He's got a lot to live up to.
He's selling jerseys. He's selling jerseys.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah. So these two great teams get together in the World Series in 1932, and we say it's a memorable World Series, even though maybe it was a bit lopsided, but is that one of the reasons it's memorable? Or tell us a little bit about what else happened in that 32 series.
Well, in order to understand the 32 World Series, I think you have to go back to the Cubs shortstop, Billy Gerges. He was the Cubs shortstop in 32. And he was young, 23, I think. He met a young woman by the name of Violet Popovich. I think I'm pronouncing that right, Popovich. And she had a very, very rough childhood. She was one of five kids or something, and her parents were divorced early. Had no money, so the mother had to put her in foster care. Which at 8, and she stayed there until she was 18, which obviously didn't help her at all. And not a long story short, but to just shorten it up a little bit, she fell for Billy Gerges, the shortstop for the Cubs, and you know, he was young, she was young, and I don't know if it was getting serious or not, but they were going out. He was told by one of the players, I think it was Kyler, I don't know if how you pronounce it, Kiki or Kiki. I pronounced it Kiki, but anyway,
yeah.
He was told by Kiki Kyler that, you know, she's looking to get married. Stay away from her. You have a career and so forth. So anyway, he did listen to her. He broke it off. Then at about early July, he was at the Hotel Carlos in Chicago. And went down to his room, went in the room. He let her in. They were arguing and whatnot, pulled out a gun. She shot him, and in the struggle and so on, she got shot. Now, neither one was seriously shot, but they were still shot and so forth. And he didn't press any charges, but he wasn't the same when he came back in a couple of weeks to play. He wasn't the same, which prompted the Cubs to go out and get Mark Koenig, who used to play with the Yankees, to get him to play short. Okay. So, and Koenig, when he left the Yankees, was well liked. Everybody liked him. Okay, so Koenig played very well from the time he went with the Cubs right to the end. And some people even think that historians think that he helped, you know, seriously helped them win the pennant. So now you got so that's the setup. Now comes the Cubs go ahead and divvy up the money for the World Series, and they vote him only a half share. Well, Babe Ruth and some of the Yankees found out about it, and they started, this was a couple weeks before the World Series, they started going after the Cubs, calling them cheapskates and nickel pinchers and all kinds of names. And so that kind of set it up, the World Series, before the first pitch was ever thrown. Ill will right there. And so, you know, with the series going on like that, they were throwing lemons out at Ruth when he came up to bat, and there was arguments back and forth by both clubs. I think at one point the commissioner had to get involved. But anyway, the other thing that happened, let me get on to the other thing that happened, was Ruth in the third game was supposed to have called his home run. It was a 2-2 count, and Charlie Root was pitching, and on the next pitch, supposedly called the home run to center field, and that's where he whacked it. It's 490 feet to center field.
Wow.
But then when you go in and start reading about it, there must have been at least 12, 15 ball players that said, no, that never happened. He never pointed to center field. And in fact, Charlie Grimm, who was playing first base, said he pointed to the mound. So, and nothing was mentioned in the papers till about 3 days later, and about him calling his shot. Well, then, of course, you know, Ruth never denied it, and it just kept going on and on. Except that I think it was in 1942, they were out in Hollywood, and Gehrig had passed away. They were playing, they were making a movie, Pride of the Yankees. And Charlie Root was out there, was a consultant, and Ruth was out there. And Babe Herman was there. He was playing Gehrig on, I guess, these long shots that they have of Gehrig in the movie. And according to Babe Herman, he heard Ruth and Root talking about the call shot. And Root said to Ruth, well, did you really hit that, or did you really point to center field and call that shot? And Babe said, no way, or something like, no, I didn't, but it makes a hell of a story. And, so in his own words, he admitted he didn't do it. That story has been carried on today, and you'll still see it, Lawrence, if you read, you know, anything about that period of time, you'll still see it being written that he called the shot.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you,
go ahead.
Researching, you know, baseball history and, you know, the book that I did on Eddie Plank, especially the further back you go, especially that era before World War II, the newspapers love to have, you know, legendary stories, or they would certainly talk up the players, or, you know, would embellish quite a bit.
Sure
the Ruth. I always suspected the Ruth story was probably not true, but hey, it's the Babe.
Yeah, that's right.
He could do anything.
There was a lot of stories about the Babe that weren't true.
The Cubs shortstop, that's sort of like the precursor to the natural. Is that the basis for that book by Bernard Malamud?
Malamud, yeah.
Seems to be.
You know, the irony, though, in that World Series, and when they're arguing back and forth and all that, was the fact that they were all talking about Koenig. You know, Mark Koenig was the guy that really started that kind of thing. I mean, he didn't start it, but he was the cause of it. And he was injured the first game. First game, he was injured. He played, just got up a couple of at-bats then. And the only other time he played was in game three, he pinch hit. Otherwise, he wasn't even a factor, other than causing all the ill will right from the beginning.
Now listen, Ronald, we have a couple minutes to go here. Let's talk a little bit, just a little bit about a couple of the other books. What prompted you to do a Christy Mathewson book some years ago?
Well, you know, at the time I did the Christy Mathewson book, there was no Christy Mathewson books. It was the first.
Yeah.
And my book was not a biography in a sense. It was more a chronology. I covered every game he pitched, both a win and a loss, every game for his entire career. Now, it sounds like it's deadly and boring, but I hopefully added a lot of color with other ball players and the history of the game moving forward.
I would think a book about Mathewson, if he covered all the games, the wins and losses, there were quite a few more wins than losses in his
career. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that was a monumental task. I don't think I'd try that again.
I was always interested in Mathewson, and I've been to his grave a couple of times up in Lewisburg. It's up the river from me. And, of course, his tie to the plank in the World Series back in the 20 years before this book about the Yankees, very interesting time. And Mathewson was a great player. Shame he died so young.
Yeah. Well, he died in the First World War with gas, I think it was. Exposure to gas. That was a shame. And that was McGraw's boy.
He was amazing, Christy Mathewson. Well, I'm talking to Ronald Mayer, the author of The 1932 Yankees, The Story of a Legendary Team, Remarkable Season, and a Wild World Series. This has been the Sunbury Press Book Show. Thank you for joining.